Welcome to the Nuclear Lounge Podcast. I am your host, Fernando Anleo. I am nuclear medicine technologist, and it is my honor to guide you through this captivating journey into the world of nuclear medicine. Welcome to the Nuclear Lounge Podcast. Today we have the privilege of speaking with a true pioneer in the field, Sarah Johnson. Sarah brings over 2 decades of experience in nuclear medicine, showcasing a remarkable journey through clinical practice, leadership, and education. With a career that spans across hands-on patient care in general imaging, cardiology, to significant contributions in oncology and PET CT imaging, Sarah's work is nothing short of inspirational. So without much further ado, Sarah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Fernando. I'm going to take you with me to introduce me everywhere I go.
That sounds good. All right. So, Sarah, your career path in nuclear medicine is incredibly inspiring.
Thank you.
So let's start from the beginning. Could you tell us more about how it all started?
Sure. So probably very similar to other people in our field, I didn't even know what nuclear medicine was until I went to college. I actually had a different major. I wanted to be a physical therapist. And there was a girl in my class that was on my floor in my dorm, and she needed me to go with her, and she was just running an errand real quick and was going to stop by her program director's office. And she was majoring in nuclear medicine. And when I went with her to the program director's office, the program director asked me what my major was, and she asked me if I'd ever heard of nuclear medicine, and I said no. And then she was so passionate while she was talking about it. And my program director was Angela Macy Byers, who's just retiring now from education. And she has been a leader in our field, too. And I had no idea. But just the passion that she had and the way that she explained everything to me, I thought nuclear medicine was just the coolest thing ever. And I feel so lucky that I still feel that way after over 20 years in the field. I still think nuclear medicine is just the coolest thing ever. But even when I went to clinicals, I still wasn't sure if I wanted to stick with nuclear medicine or go on and get a master's in something else. And I started my career at the Cleveland Clinic, and they just do so many things there and such a wide variety of studies that I just fell in love, and I know that this is what I want to do.
Well, that's great. It's funny because a lot of people, that's how they get involved. So it's really nice to see that reoccurring theme of a lot of people just kind of like falling into it and falling in love with it. And you've done that. So, it's clear from your resume that you've taken these roles seriously and have had significant impact. I'm particularly interested in hearing about your experience. Your experiences as the chair of the NMTCB board and your time with the Florida Nuclear Medicine Technologists, what were some of the significant impacts you made in these positions?
Well, I have really enjoyed both of those experiences, and being involved with the NMTCB board was really rewarding because that's a way to give back. You help shape the certification exams and, the rules for certification in our field, and that's so important. So I really enjoyed my time there because the decisions that we made and had a huge impact on our field, in our field going forward. And with the Florida Nuclear Medicine Technologist, I just love them so much. When I moved to Florida, they were a very welcoming group, and I just wanted to get involved. I didn't know how or when, and they just took me in, and I've been able to make friends that I really truly believe are lifelong friends, and have even been great mentors for me in leadership and things like that. And so I just think it's really important to be able to get involved and give back. And if you are there long enough, somebody's going to give you a job to do. So you might as well do it well and take it seriously. And I've just really enjoyed my time with both of those organizations.
I love how every chapter has its own niche. You know, everyone finds its own, you know, like you come up in the field and then you find friends, you become really, really close with them, and they help you move around in the field. Sometimes they ask you to, they they ask you to be a volunteer and they ask you to like move into other positions. So it's like once you're in, you cannot leave.
You're voluntold.
You're voluntold, exactly. So I also see that academia plays a critical role in your career, which reflects your dedication to the advancement of nuclear medicine. So you've done some research in clinical competency in nuclear medicine education. Can you elaborate on any of that?
Yeah, so that's something that I have been passionate about for probably about 10 years now. During my master's degree education, it's actually in adult education. And so we learned a lot about different educational theories and things like that. And competency-based education always stuck out to me. And that really fits all healthcare programs or health profession programs, because of course you want your workers to be competent when you go into the hospital as a patient.
Absolutely.
And I was able to contribute to the SNMMI curriculum guide when it transitioned to competency-based education. And that's when I really started to look at how different programs are assessing competency, and not just with technologists who are in training, but also technologists who are in the field, because as new radiopharmaceuticals come onto the market and get implemented in the clinical setting, those technologists have to now earn competency in a new procedure. And so there really has to be a focus on how to build competency and make that really a standard in our field so that our field can continue to grow and technologists don't innocently, but don't make mistakes that end up hurting the patient down the road or damaging even the development and implementation of a new drug.
Yeah, no. And I was actually just talking to someone about this, because it's crazy to see how many people do the same job, but very differently, the same result, but very differently, and having those standards for all these new novel radiopharmaceuticals coming to the market is so important.
Yeah.
And you go right into patient care, which is exactly what this is all about. So over the years, technology in nuclear medicine has advanced in leaps and bounds, and you've been contributing to these changes. In terms of advancements in PET-CT and hybrid imaging, what are some of the most significant developments you've seen, and how have they changed the way patient care is provided?
That's such a good question. Yeah.
Yes.
So when I started out into the field, like I said, I started at the Cleveland Clinic. We had our own radiopharmacy in-house. We had two generators, and we would elute the generator and make all of our kits. If we got called in, we'd have to elute the generator and make kits. And it was like that for a number of years when I was first in the field. And then I saw that transition to now it's mostly unit doses that you get from the pharmacy. And even I saw cardiac PET in its very beginnings with the old school OG rubidium cart. Now it's evolved to, it really is amazing, amazing rubidium cart that's out there on the market now, and advances in cardiac PET and all the theranostic agents that are coming out. And we've just seen so many changes that are just, I think it's amazing. And I'm excited to see where our field goes from here.
Hey, me too. I'm right there with you. And we got to stay kind of current with all these advancements. So I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
And obviously your commitment to education is evident, both in terms of your personal achievement and your role as an educator. So this dual perspective must give you kind of like a unique view of the industry. How do you feel like your role as an educator influenced your professional life? And going along with that, what advice would you give to those starting out in nuclear medicine?
I see so much as an educator, first because it's amazing to see students come in not knowing anything about nuclear medicine. I was one of them once, I know.
Me too.
And then learning so much during school and seeing that passion for the field ignite in them, and seeing how they take their career even after they graduate and where they go from there. It's kind of amazing to me. I've seen students graduate and go into leadership positions and get involved in the society. And it's just really neat to see them grow and develop. Mm-hmm. But also being an educator who goes into different clinical sites, you really get a feel for leadership and how good leadership or poor leadership can affect the dynamic in a department, and even how it affects patient care, and seeing how different levels of competency affect that patient care, and seeing that there is also lots of different ways to do things that still get the same result.
Yeah.
And so I've learned a lot from other more experienced technologists just going into the clinical site as an educator that I'm able to take back to the classroom. And so I think all of those things have influenced my professional life. I see the need to get involved in network because I see where that takes people. Mm-hmm. When you know people and you have those connections, I see how well you learn from other people when you do network. And so me personally, I've learned to value some of those things more, that even when I first started out in education or ed tech, I really didn't understand or value that as much. And now I really see the impact of it. And so advice to students based on that is to get involved and to network and to volunteer and give back to your field. And it really does help you learn. It also advances our field and really helps patient care when people are able to learn from each other and network and things like that.
Yeah, and the purpose for us, we want to move the field forward. Now, you mentioned Ignite, and that's the kind of like drive that we need. We want to instill passion into these students coming in and be able to tell them, hey, this field is amazing. There's so many opportunities that you can take and just learn from. And you mentioned the social aspect. Going to these meetings, learning new things. I don't know how many times I've heard that around, and I think it's really good to see the camaraderie that is created at these meetings and the good friendships that come out of those. So
yeah,
I'm really appreciative of that.
Even to piggyback off that advice to young people is to not be afraid of change either. Yeah. You kind of have to go with the flow sometimes. Don't be afraid of challenges because that passion really you need to find ways to keep that passion or else you get burnout. Mm-hmm. And that's when people allow themselves to get stuck and they start to feel burnout or stuck where they're at. And so don't allow yourself to get stuck. Keep learning, keep setting goals, and keep passionate about the field. And that will help you, because then it won't seem like work as much, right?
Absolutely.
It's not just a job. It's something that you really care about. And I think that is a key to success and longevity in our field.
Yeah, yeah. And I think adaptation would be the right word with
yes.
such an evolving field.
Adapt and overcome, right?
Uh-huh, exactly. So, Sarah, your expertise extends into some very specialized areas, particularly in oncology. Your work, especially on glioblastoma research. Can you discuss how nuclear medicine is evolving within the field of cancer diagnosis and treatment?
Sure. So I'll use glioblastoma as an example. That's something that is very near and dear to my heart. My dad actually had glioblastoma, and when he was diagnosed, there was no hope. They didn't really offer us any hope. There was no effective treatment. It was just, we just had to wait. And mm-hmm. it was this impending sense of doom. And during that time, I was looking for some kind of clinical trials, because I understand why chemo and radiation aren't that great. And I understand how devastating of a diagnosis glioblastoma is, because mm-hmm. I've had patients with it before. And I've always thought that nuclear medicine really holds the key to that.
Yes.
Other imaging modalities and treatments that are mainstream are failing patients with that disease. And I feel like just because of the microenvironment of glioblastomas and how complex it is, we really need to take advantage of our ability to see function.
Yeah.
And kind of know what the cells are metabolizing and taking and use that to actually treat it. And I really wholeheartedly believe that our field holds the key specifically to that disease and giving better hope for patients. And I think that same concept applies to so many other cancers that you see that are just have a rough diagnosis you know, and neuroendocrine tumors were pretty rough too. And now look at all the things we're doing with neuroendocrine tumors, and even look at PSMA with prostate cancer. There's so many opportunities for us in that area to really change outcomes for cancer patients. And I get really excited about that.
Yeah, I know. And one of the bigger things is the side effects. I mean, you have cancer treatments, chemotherapy, radiation, with all these side effects that a lot of the research that goes into neuroendocrine tumors, PSA, glioblastoma, those, and you start understanding like, hey, actually this could be the treatment to go before we go to that, or, you know, it could eventually maybe substitute. I don't know.
Right.
Well, that's where it's headed, and you're going to get excited about that, because it's exciting to see that maybe we're not finding the cure yet, but it is a step in the right direction. And that's where we want to go with it.
Right. And at the very least, some of those things may be able to improve the quality of life for a short period of time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I agree. That's very true. Yeah. So, Sarah, you've been involved in various professional training programs. You attended multiple meetings, and you were one of the speakers for many of them. You were also part of the Leadership Academy. I actually just, I graduate tomorrow from it. Super excited about it. But how important do you think continuous professional development and training are in the field?
I think that it's extremely important. You look at how much our field is progressing so quickly, where we have a lot of imaging and therapy agents that are newly approved or on the verge of being approved and progressing fairly quickly through clinical trials, as far as the clinical trials world goes. And it's really important for nuclear medicine technologists to continue to learn and develop their skills, and even their soft skills or the leadership, you know, because as our field grows, there's other opportunities outside of the clinical setting. And you need to have some of those other leadership skills and things like that to be able to really be successful in those areas. So even if not, you don't want to leave the clinical setting, even having some of those skills helps you better deal with patients and their families and things like that, or navigate the workplace that actually improves patient outcomes. So I think that those softer skills and the leadership training and leadership development is important to all technologists, because it does help you do your job better, and it helps have better patient outcomes, you know, when your group works together as a team. And as far as the technical training and learning new skills, you know, I touched on the radiopharmaceuticals, but you even look at advances in our field with AI, or how much cameras have changed in the past couple years. Now we have all these solid state detectors and multi-crystal and digital counting and all of this stuff. And technologists need to learn how to use the new equipment and understand how it works, and how to make those changes in the equipment when you implement a new radiopharmaceutical. So I think that it's incredibly important for technologists to continue to learn.
Yeah, and hopefully we can reach to as many technologists and students, because it's important. It's very important to have that. And looking towards the future, what do you see? I know you mentioned some of the radioisotopes and some of these therapies, but what do you think is the next big thing in nuclear medicine? Like, are there any emerging technologies, therapies, or anything in particular you find exciting?
I find it all exciting because I'm a big nerd. Most of us are, right?
Yeah.
But I think that all of the new advances with our equipment is really cool. The solid state imaging and things like that, being able to do dosimetry on those cameras is really going to be important for new therapies that are coming out and that type of thing. I love all the theranostic agents that are in the pipeline. I'm really excited about those.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. So we kind of talked about your professional journey and insights. I think it would be valuable for our listeners to hear a little bit more about the personal side of your career. Obviously, you gather wealth of knowledge and experience. Do you have a guiding philosophy or mantra And what advice would you give to those aspiring to follow in your footsteps in this field?
I would say, first of all, being adaptable and being open to change, because change is an absolute in our field. Mm-hmm. We have a very science and technology-based field, and those are always continuing to develop and evolve, and our field comes right along with it. Mm-hmm. And so as technologists, you have to be able to adapt to changes, not just in implementing new radiopharmaceuticals and things like that, but just every day when you have changes in your patient or your schedule. And so advice to students and new technologists, be adaptable and open to change, because it's going to be there. Yeah. And you're going to have to go with it. Don't be afraid of challenges or challenging yourself, because that's how we all grow and learn. I think being authentic and being able to follow your passions, because there's so many different things that you can do in the field of nuclear medicine that you really can find the thing that you're most passionate about and pursue that. And if you do, then you're going to end up creating a really great, really rewarding career for yourself, because you're going to be, you know, living in your purpose and what you were meant to do and something that you're passionate about, and that will always be rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. I think each one of us has that, that idea that once you get a little bit more into the field, you start understanding your calling. You start understanding, hey, you know what? I want to go into industry. I want to go into research. I want to do cardiology and all those things. So it's good to have that adaptation characteristic in you, because you never know where it's going to take you. You never know where the career, I mean, it has so many paths you can take. So I think it's good. Adaptation is a good way to kind of explain that.
Yeah.
And always keep your eyes open to it.
Get involved and try and see as many things as you can. And that way that helps you find your passion. Mm-hmm. And then set personal and professional goals for yourself too. Mm-hmm. And don't hold yourself back. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of students and new technologists don't want to come to professional meetings because they feel like it's above their head or they're intimidated by it.
Yeah.
But pretty much everyone in our field that I've encountered is really welcoming and friendly, especially when they see somebody that's early career. If you're there and you want to get involved, there's people that are just waiting to mentor you.
Yes.
You know, you'll find a mentor and that person will help you along the way. And, you know, just go up to just about anybody. Mm-hmm. Just talk to people, get to meet people. And people are really excited to share their passion and their expertise. And so the best way to do that is to network and get involved.
Yeah. And I think that mentor-mentee type of relationship needs to happen more in our field. Because I'm not a seasoned, like, I don't have so much experience yet. But myself, I'm looking forward to having that mentor and just kind of, like, guide me through the career. Especially, like you said, early on when you're still trying to figure out, like, hey, I'm still kind of having, you know, second thoughts about, like, should I do this? Should I do that with my career? And having that mentor, having that person that has been through that, be able to guide you and say, hey, you know what? Clinical sounds good. I know you. I know what characteristics you bring to the field. Research. I know. And you know, it's always the trial and error. Like, mm-hmm. It's not like you're just going to go into it and be like, oh, I'm an expert. No. I mean, you're going to come to those roadblocks that are going to either make it or break it, right? Either way, you fight through that. But yeah. So for our final question, Sarah, what is your favorite radiopharmaceutical and why?
Fernando, I'm terrible. I'm terrible at picking favorites. I can never pick a favorite anything. The only favorite thing that I ever have is a favorite child. That's my son, but he's my only son.
Go. Okay.
So shout out to Jack. Radiopharmaceutical, I'm going to narrow it down to three. It's the best I can do.
Okay.
So first one, I would say rubidium, because I love all the advances that have come along with rubidium and cardiac PET and the myocardial blood flow reserve and things like that we can do. I just think it's amazing what we can do for patients with cardiac. But of course, all the theranostic agents are amazing that are coming out.
Yes.
But the other two that I would say right now are my favorites, because my favorites are always going to change, are the glioblastoma agents that are in the Clinical Trials Network that Telix is actually developing. I've been watching those for a long time. That was just entering very early clinical stages when my dad was diagnosed and I was looking for clinical trials for him. And I've just been watching that drug progress through clinical trials, and I'm really excited to see where that will go. They have an imaging agent that's been around for a while, the amino acids, and then they have a therapy agent along with it. And I'm excited to see where it goes. And so I've been watching both of those.
Awesome. Yeah.
I've been stalking them.
Yeah.
Stalking the radiopharmaceutical development.
Hey, that's okay. That's good. We got to learn, right? Well, no, that. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate you being here, and we would love to have you again in the near future. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Fernando. It's been great.
Until next time.